Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette Morgan. So glad to have you along, and thank you for joining us. Do want to let you know, today is a pre-recorded show, so we won't be taking any live phone calls, but we are going to feature some of our favorite phone calls from this year. So stay tuned for lots of information, perhaps that you missed prior in our other shows. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and it's brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics.
Hello, everybody, and we are almost to New Year's.
Again.
Yeah, well, I've seen 76 New Year's, so what the hell? Anyway.
Well, it's still exciting, though, is it or isn't it? Tell me.
No,
what do you think?
No. We go to bed so darn early. I have not been up to watch the New Year come in decades.
Really?
Yeah, no. Bendy and I have our evening routine, and we almost never vary it, assuming we're both in town.
Okay, so no New Year's party for you?
No New Year's Eve party. You know, the last New Year's Eve party I went to, I think, was 6 or 7 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. The Grangers and us went out to a casino and danced. And when midnight came around, Bendy and I were so relieved to get in the car and go home.
Okay.
And I'm up at 4:30 or 5 o'clock every day.
Yeah.
And so for me, 10 o'clock is up late.
Of course it is. And you know, one of the things that came up at this conference that I came back from was sleep.
Yeah.
They asked about, you know, how many of you get 6.5, 7.5 hours of sleep every night, because sleep is critical for health and wellness.
Yes. Yes. Well, we do. We do. You know. Every night, once we get Ivory tucked into bed, you know, she goes to bed around 8 or 8:30 with a book. She's allowed to read, and she almost always falls asleep with a book on her chest. And then Bendy and I get our showers, and we crawl into bed, and I sit with my back against the headboard, and she sits between my legs with her back and head resting on my chest. And we just lay there and cuddle, and she usually streams a video from one of her Chinese websites so that she gets the Chinese subtitles and I can have the English. But we watch the movie about half the time, and the rest of the half of the time we just talk.
Mm.
We just share our days, and sometimes we just cuddle. And then usually by about 9 or 9:30, her head falls to one side on my chest, and I know she's fallen asleep. And I lay her down to my right, and then I snuggle down and with her and go to sleep.
Right.
And so, you know, she falls asleep in my arms every night, and seldom does it take till 10 o'clock.
Right. Okay. All right.
So midnight parties are just not in our lexicon, I fear.
Yeah. And you know what they used to say, remember, a long time ago, I haven't said this, thought of this in a long time, was early to bed and early to rise makes a man
healthy, wealthy, and wise.
Yeah.
Sure. And you know who that was, don't you?
Who?
Benjamin Franklin.
Ah, okay.
Yes, that was one of Benjamin Franklin's witticisms. Early to bed and early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise.
I wonder why he said that, though.
Well, he was overweight, but he was otherwise healthy. He was quite wealthy.
Okay.
And even today, 200 and some odd years later, he is considered to have been quite wise.
Yeah.
Though flying kites with a key attached to the string in a thunderstorm doesn't strike me as overly wise, but he didn't know.
He was sharing his secrets of success, huh?
That's right, yeah. Well, yeah, and, you know, one of his secrets of success really was he supported every religion in Boston. Mm. You know, in those days, you didn't just go into church and sit down. You bought a pew.
Okay.
You actually, that was how you supported the minister and the church. You would buy a pew, and you basically had to pay for it every year. Mm. And he owned a pew in essentially every church in Boston, not just Christian church. He also owned them in the synagogues. Mm. Yeah. So, yeah, if it was a religious institution, he owned a pew.
Okay.
And he kind of made the circuits. And that way he was seen in every religious congregation in the city of whatever denomination or belief system. Consequently, everybody thought he was a good man.
Mm.
And they did business with him. Whether he was really that universally pious or whether he was just a good businessman, I'm not sure.
Mm, and but I guess we will not find out today.
We will not find out today. Although I would recommend that those of you who want a different view of Benjamin Franklin, read his autobiography.
Mm.
He was a bit of a scamp.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
He would be canceled today.
Okay. I see. Okay. All right. Interesting.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yes.
So, Jerry, you know, it's the end of the year. People are, you know, looking forward to the new day. And with the new year, at least when you're younger, you try to make some resolutions. I don't know what I want to do this year or if I even want to bother making some. But what are your new resolutions? What are your new thoughts as the new year rolls in?
I have got more projects in mind that I'm just gearing up for. One of the ones I just came to today that just irritates the hell out of me. I'm putting together a Facebook page as well as a new website that's going to have basically 100 or so eventually videos on subjects, everything from breast cancer to prostate cancer to GI distress to arthritis to heart disease to dementia to whatever. And I have done the rough recordings on 33, 34 of those. And then you send them off to have them have the post editing done so they can try to make me look less stupid. So I don't say, what was I trying to, yeah. So they take all of that guff out and they add some music and they put in some illustrations and stuff. And it's supposed to make it pretty. But I've just watched a bunch of them.
Okay.
They stink.
Oh, no.
So I'm going to have to go back and re-record all of them.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
So I'm starting from scratch. I'm going to throw out everything I recorded.
Wow. Okay.
And go back and start fresh. I have two new, you're well aware of the two new levels to longevity medical clinic that we're putting together. We're looking for a way to bring in younger people at a lower cost and then one for the real high rollers for whom cost is no object. So I can do things that ought to be done, but simply can't be done at our current price point because they just cost us too much. And so I want to get those going. I am looking for an associate slash partner sometime during the coming year in Florida and or Texas and or Tennessee to put in at least one more.
What? And, no Hawaii?
And perhaps, no. Hawaii is a high tax state. I'm only looking at states that are not going to tax me above and beyond the 40% I already pay to the feds.
Yes.
I don't want to pay 40 to the feds plus my Social Security plus my Obamacare plus my, you know, other stuff. And then 13% to the state. Mm. No, thank you. So no, I'm looking at the no tax states. So at least one and maybe up to three other locations for longevity on the east and central part of the country. Yeah. So
I know our patients are already excited about that.
Yeah. So, you know, and I've got three other books in mind, one of which I'm actually already starting with Dan Nelson. So, you know, just a few minor, minor projects. Yeah, my wife and I were commenting the other day that obviously I plan to keep trucking for another 20 or 25 years. But whenever I do topple over and die, I'm confident there will be at least six unfinished projects in the works when I go.
Well, a testament,
I can't seem to stop.
No, a testament to your zest for life and to keep the brain alive and active. As we've talked about health span and lifespan, a lot of it is also about purpose in life, right?
Yes.
If you have purpose in life, you do add quality to your life. Mm-hmm. When we lose that purpose, we lose the quality and the determination and the will to live.
Yes.
I mean, what do you get up for every morning? So
yeah.
Those things are important to keep us going. And I talk about that when I see my patients. And obviously, I can't give them a will, but I can give them good health. So they do have a will.
Mm-hmm.
And so they talk to me about that. And it's interesting conversations, you know, like how do you add that desire? What are you going to do next? What do you want to stay healthy for? And those are important things. Because, you know, I know you want to live for a reason, but everybody must have their own reason.
Yes, they do, sure.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, I've got some more less business-oriented ones, too, obviously. I've got an 11-year-old daughter at home.
That's right.
And, you know, I plan to stick around till she's 35 and starts to date. Because I told her she's not allowed to date till she's 35.
And, okay.
So, yeah, and of course, that's one of my tongue-in-cheek businesses, is that I'm going to restart America's only chastity belt company. There hasn't been one in this country, I think, forever. And but it's got great lucrative possibilities. I could design a modern chastity belt. I could sell the key to the fathers and then sell a copy of the key at twice the price to the boyfriend.
And,
so.
All right, Jerry. You keep making your plans. Let's see how many of them come to fruition.
That's right. No. No, I want my daughter to have a wonderful romantic life, but I just don't want her to start it too soon. That's all.
Well, and I'm sure many fathers out there share your sentiment.
That's right, yes. Well, you know, I there's an old James Stewart movie, Shenandoah.
Okay.
Which it's an old film. I saw it when I was a kid. But there was one scene in that film that struck me even as an adolescent. And as Jimmy Stewart is the father of this attractive young woman, and she has a suitor who wants to come and ask for his permission to marry the daughter.
A
quaint custom. And the young man comes in, and Jimmy is standing there cleaning his guns when the young man comes in to ask for his daughter's hand in marriage. And so the conversation begins, and the young man says, well, you know, sir, I'm in love with your daughter, and I'd like to make her my wife. And Jimmy stops cleaning the guns for a minute, and he looks up at the young man, and he says, well, why do you want to marry her? And he said, well, sir, I love her. And he said, it's obvious you love her, but do you like her? And he said, what do you mean, like? I love her. And Jimmy said, I'm not concerned about love her. That comes. Do you like her? He said, she's not always going to be young. She's not always going to be pretty. Times are going to get tough. She's going to have her moods. There will be times when love may fade. The question is, do you like her enough to spend a lifetime with her, no matter what? <You know? laughs> And it's a different view. He was kind of putting aside the burst of romantic fervor and asking for the deeper underlying, you know, What do you think of her as a person, basically? What do you think of her as a human being? Is this someone you really like for who and what she is, not for your romantic infatuation?
Yeah. And sometimes it's difficult to tell them apart because, you know, you have to have a certain amount of liking in order to develop and prolong a relationship.
Yes, that's right. Sure. But, you know, I think that was actually in some ways an advantage of the old parents choosing the mates for the youngsters.
Because
the parents are looking at this more objectively.
Right.
You know, what are his abilities to take care of her? What are her characteristics to, you know, to be a good wife, a good mother, etc.? And the parents on each side were looking at the other family's offer, proffer. And, you know, those arranged marriages didn't break up any more often than our romantic ones do. And in fact, I think they broke up a whole lot less often than our current romantically based marriages do. Because passion is powerful, but it is sometimes ephemeral. And really loving, caring, respecting another human being is, in the long run, critically important.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think marriages cannot survive unless you have that, because you have to be able to compensate and still continue to care enough to want to be in that relationship, right? There will come ups and downs. Every relationship, even work, everything has ups and downs.
Absolutely.
But you have to love it enough to continue on the bad days just as much as on the good days.
Yes, well, that is the advantage of owning the joint, is I can't get fired if I get fed up and go home early. So,
all right, Jerry.
But I am more likely, if I get fed up and go home early, to, you know, wake up in the middle of the night and come in for 2 hours in my office where the place is quiet and do some work.
There you go.
So, what do you do?
There you go. Good for you.
Well,
we want
guess
the
what?
Same passion in all of our patients.
Yes, we do. But you know what? Our time for this segment is up, and we did not even touch on Longevity Medical Clinic's stuff.
Let's do it next segment.
So let's do it next segment, shall we?
Hi there, and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. And we are not live today. We recorded some things for you, some fresh ideas, some new information for you, and we're featuring some of our favorite phone calls. All right, to start off the show, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Umat discussing something very important as we're aging, right?
Okay, let's talk about America's number one problem.
Uh-huh.
And no, this is not political.
Okay.
It is not a political party or a philosophy. It's, we're too damn fat.
Mm-hmm.
That is America's number one problem. You know, we are the only industrialized country on the planet with a dropping lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
Other countries have drug problems. Other countries have depression. Other countries went through COVID. Other countries had all kinds of issues. We've got the shortest lifespan of any industrialized country, and it's because we are the fattest country on the planet, or at least the fattest major. There are a few smaller ones. Tonga, you know, some of the South Pacific islands are fatter than America writ large. But as countries over a million population, countries that, you know, that have some heft in the world, excuse the pun, you know, weight, heft. We're the fattest. And what people don't realize when they get worried about fat shaming is when doctors want to talk to you about you're too fat, we're not worried about your beach body. We're not worried about how you look in a skimpy bikini. We're not worried about your looks at all. What we're worried about is those extra pounds are going to raise your risk of almost every cancer we know of. Breast cancer is going to go up 11 to 20%, depending on how fat you are. Your chances of dying from your breast cancer are directly proportional to how fat you are. Prostate cancer, you get the same amount of prostate cancer in lean and fat men, but the aggressive prostate cancers more likely to kill you are related to your body fat. Most of the hepatic and gallbladder related, the biliary tree cancers, 51% are triggered by being overweight.
Mm-hmm.
31% of the gastroesophageal cancers are triggered by being overweight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Every cancer you can think of, even skin cancers, are increased by weight. And that's simply because that fat is not a cosmetic issue. It's actually putting inflammatory peptides, enzymes, and cytokines into your entire body. They're getting dumped into your bloodstream. And they're triggering inflammation everywhere in your body. And it's those chronic, every day of the week, 24-hour-a-day inflammatory changes in the tissues that help to cause the mutations that trigger the cancers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It also suppresses your immune response so that you're less and less able to recognize and fight and kill those cancers.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The other things we've got to think about are dementia.
Yeah.
That inflammation is killing your brain cells.
Right.
It's damaging the LDL cholesterol in your blood so that it forms plaques and plugs up your arteries and triggers strokes and heart attacks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It alters your carbohydrate metabolism and your insulin levels so that you become diabetic, which can cause heart attacks, strokes, blindness, kidney failure.
Yeah.
You know. So if you look at the reason Americans are dying, primarily cardiovascular disease and cancer,
mm-hmm.
the two biggies,
mm-hmm.
with diabetes running a close third, and they're all dramatically impacted by body weight.
Mm. Right.
So one of the things we've got to do as a clinic is get a better handle on our patients' weight.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what we've been working on for actually quite a long time, ever since this has become a household topic and literally seems sexy because everybody in the movie industry is now using it. We are more medical, and so we've been thoughtful about what we want to do, how we want to do it, when we want to do it. And we waited till the fluff wore off a little bit, and the objective literature has now proven that the medication works. It's effective. Yes, it causes side effects, but overall, it is reducing risk for cardiovascular morbidity and mortality.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we are addressing one of the biggest killers in the United States, as you just mentioned, which is cardiovascular disease. And then maybe data will say something similar about cancer risk as well. But these are two important factors, neurodegenerative being a third one, which is dementia, which happens with every cardiometabolic disease because that's the pathway.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're trying to make a dent in that, one person at a time, one clinic at a time, then we have to use the tools that we are provided.
Yep.
And so we have now come up with a program that we can offer in all three clinics, literally to anybody. We're not restricting this to longevity patients alone.
Because longevity patients aren't the heaviest ones that are
correct. And so this is for anybody listening in. It'll be run at 3 months at a time. You can obviously prolong after 3 months if you want to stay longer, but short duration of time, burst of knowledge, education, handouts, and functional medicine approach, a lot of time with every member of the team that should be involved, being involved in educational purposes, taking vitals, taking measurements.
Having you come in every week.
Yes, discussing what's going on, how can they mitigate the side effects. So, it's a hands-on. With all hands on deck, the teams are very excited in all three clinics. By the way, you didn't know this, we're getting calls already.
Good.
Yeah, calls have been coming in about what this program is, so they're hearing us talk. So we're launching January, when people will be ready after the eating is done.
All right.
And it's the start of a new calendar year.
Uh-huh.
For us, it's a continuum of the body, but we will be ready. And basically, it's how to help you lose the weight, which is causing diseases for you, what tools to use in this, come in regularly to visit with your doctor, adjust the doses, the medications, the nutrients and supplements that are necessary to prevent side effects, as well as how to continue when the program is done, either with us or hopefully with us,
mm-hmm.
into something else. But basically, anybody can come in, and we're willing now to offer this program to help you shed the extra pounds and then to be healthier as you go forward, hopefully with us in some other capacity, but definitely opening the doors and not restricting to a full commitment of the longevity program.
And that's really important.
Yeah.
That then sets us up for the second.
Exactly.
One that I think is very difficult to, is tougher than obesity right now to handle, because we now have, you know, the semaglutide that we can use as a real aid. The next one is, how do we get them moving?
Yeah, but that's part of the education process, right, Jerry? Right. Unless we spend the time with the patients, and unless, and everybody will have ups and downs with it too, and I recognize that, but unless we're willing to do it and teach them and tell them how, when, and how much, they're not going to succeed. With the semaglutides, they're going to lose a lot of muscle mass, and that is going to slow down their metabolic pathways, so that once they come off the medication, they might regain all the weight because their pathways.
To get moving.
Exactly. Yeah. And so how do we help them prevent loss of muscle mass, maintain as much muscle as possible, lose fat while they're doing this, and then be successful? So it's slower, but yet it's for the long run. It's for the long haul. This is for them to be successful, not just for 3 months or 6 months, but for years down the road. And today, the statistics are that 95 to 98% of the patients will regain all the weight they lost in a weight loss program.
In a typical weight loss
program.
The nice thing about this one is we're using the semaglutide every week, and then once you get down to your goal weight, we could use it 1 week a month instead of every week, and that then cuts the cost by 3/4 too. So, you know, that makes it more acceptable for the long term. Assuming, of course, you're somebody that doesn't have bad side effects from the medication. And there are those, you know, some people just can't tolerate it.
Yes, that is right. And so it has to, we have to be very, very careful. Like, you know, we've talked about the side effects. You've gone into them at length in the past. That's not changed. The fact is, what's changed is that we'll be using lower doses, and we will be careful, and we're choosing our patients carefully and then monitoring them during that time to see what's happening to them.
Right.
But this is a very important topic, a very important point, a very important issue that needs to be addressed to help patients succeed. And, you know, there are so many other just quote-unquote weight loss companies out there that are also using the newer technology now to help their clients succeed.
Sure.
And
Then the other thing I wanted to touch on is activity, yeah. Exercise. You almost hate to say exercise because people connect that with a gym. Mm. But the reason I'm bringing that up, and let me go back to one of our big bugaboos, which is breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There is a real movement in the oncology media these days to start considering physical activity to be a therapy instead of just surgery, radiation, and chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
Because the numbers are rather compelling. A woman with breast cancer who does 15 minutes of vigorous activity a day cuts her risk of dying by 30%.
Mm.
30% better survival from 15 minutes a day of vigorous activity. Now, that's not walking the Pekingese. That's
working
up a sweat.
Oh, for sure.
But
yes.
At 30 minutes a day
of
vigorous physical activity, you cut the risk of dying by 60%.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Half an hour a day of vigorous physical activity cuts your risk of dying by 60%.
Right.
We don't have any drugs that cut your risk of dying by 60%.
No. And, I mean, you're talking about people that have cancer, and I've seen this. I've had patients that have gone through chemotherapy and come back and told me, oh, my gosh, I was the healthiest person there. But they were healthy enough to begin with, unfortunately had a complication, which anybody can have at any time.
Sure.
But they were able to then come out of it once the treatment was done and remain vital and active
yes.
after that as well. So the question is, you know, bad things can happen. But still, how do you survive that?
Yes.
And how do you still live with purpose and improve the health span in your lifespan? It's all about that. It's all about the health span. Nobody wants to be in a nursing home and have dementia and be cared to. When you ask people, nobody says that's what they want.
No, no.
And yet it happens to many of us.
It does. It does. But you know, the difficulty we've got is trying to quantify people who didn't get sick because of better lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know, for instance,
right, we do, yeah,
that men who take a PDE5 inhibitor,
yes,
something like tadalafil, get 50% less less prostate cancer.
Yeah.
50% less prostate cancer than men that don't take tadalafil.
Yeah.
That still means half of the men that were going to get prostate cancer are still going to get it.
Yeah.
And the guys who do get it say, well, I took the tadalafil, I got it anyway, why did I bother taking it? And the guy who took it and didn't get prostate cancer is just like to say, well, I was healthy to start with, I'm still healthy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when the bad stuff doesn't happen to you,
right,
it's easy to forget what you were doing,
yes,
that kept you healthy.
That's right.
Okay? Because
yes,
we only see it when the bad stuff happens.
That's right. That's
and when
right
the bad stuff happens, then the idea is to say, well, I did everything right and I still got sick, so yeah, doing things right must not count.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've seen both sides. I'm remembering a couple of patients right now as you're saying this. You know, it takes them a while and they go, you know what? I actually do think that this helped me. And so I have patients like that in our practice, Jerry, who will credit the program to yeah helping them. It's very hard for some people sometimes. Well, I would have been like this anyways. Like, okay,
that's
maybe.
Right.
And I can't prove or disprove anything. How
no
can I?
Well, because, you know, statistics apply to populations,
yeah,
not to individuals.
Right.
You know, whether you as an individual are going to get a cancer, not get a cancer, die from the cancer, not die from the cancer, I can't predict what you as an individual. I can tell you what the odds are that
right
we can shift the odds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we can do in life.
Mm-hmm.
We move the odds in our favor as far as we reasonably can,
mm-hmm,
and then we just relax and play the game.
Right.
And
right
that has been my mantra for my entire adult life.
You yeah know,
I move the odds in my favor, and then I just play like hell.
Right. And I'll talk so about a couple of things that we found out on testing about this issue in a minute when we come back.
All right.
And welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon. We're pre-recorded this week, but we did want to feature some of our favorite phone calls.
Hello, John.
Good morning, all. How are you today?
We're
good.
Great.
I'm glad that. Hey, I've pestered you in the past, and I'm going to keep on pestering you.
Okay.
That's good.
Anyway,
we're going to have somebody call in, you know.
Yeah. I've got a prostate that I just had an MRI done on,
uh-huh,
and got the results back from the MRI, and scheduled for a biopsy already.
Okay, good.
So I guess my question is what everything you've said so far has been, you know, has gotten me ready for the next step. And so I'm wondering what goes on after the biopsy.
Okay.
It's the what do you call it? The
urologist?
Yeah, the has went over with me the findings and stuff. It's kind of iffy if there's anything there or not. He says that the appearance of the central gland is consistent with benign prostatic hyperplasia.
Good.
So I'm thinking it's going to be more of a see what's going on in there, and then.
Well, if it's consistent with
out
BPH,
why are they doing a biopsy?
Exactly.
yeah. I mean, you usually, if you do an MRI and you see something suspicious for a cancer, is why you biopsy what you think may be a cancer. If it looks like BPH, then you don't have a real indication for the biopsy. That kind of raised my eyebrows just a smidgen.
Yeah. Because I've got, you know, measurements and all that other stuff here. And I was kind of wondering that after reading that.
How high is your PSA?
It's 7 plus.
Okay, so it's pretty high. And how big is your prostate?
7.1.
What are the measurements?
7.1.
That's the reading on the PSA.
PSA. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Prostate volume.
Yeah.
Is that what you're?
That's what I'm asking.
5.0, 4.7 by 2.8 centimeters. And then there's a 34 cc beside that.
Okay, so yeah, so 34 cc volume is, that's not all that big. You know, this is not one of those 80 and 100 cc volumes.
Oh, really?
No.
It's
bigger than average. You know, it is.
That's
why they're saying hypertrophy, because it is enlarged. But what kind of symptoms are you having?
I found it. It'd been a number of years. 18 was my last PSA, and then I got one in January of this year, and it was up 6.8, I think it was. And then the next one was, like 7.1, and it set off a bunch of alarms. So,
yeah,
I guess I'm.
Well, and those alarms, you know, those are a good reason to do the MRI. But if the MRI doesn't show anything suspicious of a malignancy, then I say, what are they biopsying? And they're just doing a random biopsies then. Generally, when I send somebody out for an MRI, it's because I want to know, is there anything here that needs to be biopsied? And if we see a significant lesion that is suspicious for a cancer, then we want to get a piece of it and see what it is.
They were saying that it there's no
no focal lesion.
There's imaging. The lesion is seen as a well defined focus of low signal intensity, T2 score of 4/5.
Okay, so there is a lesion, a focus lesion that they're looking at.
Yeah, I guess it is.
All right. Yeah, so see, if there is a specific lesion, if they've got a well-defined focal lesion, now you've got a good reason for the biopsy,
mm-hmm.
because you want to find out what is that lesion.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay. Now, see, you gave me more information and totally changed my mind.
Yep.
Right.
Oh.
Because before I was scratching my head saying, why are they biopsying this poor guy? But now I say, okay, good choice.
Yeah.
Biopsy it.
Mm-hmm. If they do see a focal lesion, you want to find out whether there are any atypical cells in that lesion or not. And if there are, then future diagnostic or therapeutic treatments will be based on what the biopsy results come back at.
That's right.
Yeah, they also said there's no evidence of anything, no bone, no...
No metastatic disease right now. Yeah.
Sure.
Good.
Yeah.
That's all good.
Yeah, and at the moment, it's a well-defined lesion, so it doesn't look like it's something spreading, it doesn't look like it's anything worrisome. So
correct.
This is all very good news, except you do have something there that they don't know what it is, and they're going to go take a piece of it and find out.
Right, and, it hasn't spread anywhere, it hasn't gone anywhere. If it is focal and a small lesion, it's easy to manage and treat it in case it is malignant.
That's right. So... I think you're...
Sounds like I'm on the right track then.
Sounds like you're on exactly the right track.
Yeah.
If that were my prostate, I want to know what is that lesion.
Yeah.
So,
Yep, yep. So, and me so having to read this to you, I learned something too. So
good, yeah. And we're in agreement that the biopsy is a good idea. So
that's right.
So, you know, keep us informed and let us know how things go, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you very much. I will take that, and I will get back to you.
Okay,
take care.
Thank you for your call, John. And welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon. We're pre-recorded this week, but we did want to feature some of our favorite phone calls. We're going to head over to Port Orchard. Dave is on the line. Hi, Dave. Good morning.
Hello, Dave.
Good morning to everybody. Hey, according to my longevity doctor, I'm a very healthy guy.
Good.
But one thing I do have now is AFib, and it's been ongoing now. It started years ago very, very occasionally, and it's developed now to more of a chronic issue where it's happening about, maybe every 2 to 3 weeks on there. And, you know, of course, it's frustrating because everything they say to avoid AFib, you know, don't drink, I don't drink, it's exercise, I exercise, you know, lead a healthy life, diet, you know, everything is fine, but just it's upsetting that that's became part of my life on there.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I'm on Eliquis. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my longevity supplements I can't take, like Relief Factor and Resveratrol. But now the doctor wants to put me on this other drug that it's hard to pronounce. But boy, when I researched it, it's really critical. I want your opinion of it.
Amiodarone?
Amiodarone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Boy, you read the literature on that.
I have a patient, a side story, a gentleman who was put on amiodarone. He came off of it, and he said he will never go back on that drug ever again, regardless of how bad his AFib is.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I read.
See, the side effects.
Oh. Yes, but what side effects specifically were bothering him is the question.
Well, you know, he had some renal issues with it. He had lethargy, fatigue, everything that he didn't want. Again, same like this gentleman, robust, older, but healthy, active, worked out every day, watched his diet, and he couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly me.
Yeah, and, you know, if you're the cardiologist loves it because it does stop the atrial fibrillation most of the time, but the quality of life, why fix one thing and make yourself totally miserable for the rest of your life with everything else? Have you talked to your doctor about whether or not you're a candidate for the Watchman?
No, we haven't gone that far yet.
Okay.
But I've read about that. And, of course, that doesn't stop AFib.
No, it doesn't.
It prevents you from clotting, right?
Well, yeah, it prevents you from having the strokes and you know, flipping the clots off and the pulmonary embolisms.
Correct. But for the AFib, he could probably talk about ablation. Did they try that for you, or?
Oh, no, I haven't gone that far yet. This is new in my life. And I wonder, you know, my AFib, most times when I get it, it lasts maybe 4 hours and I self-correct. One time it lasted about 12. But can I just live with it? I am taking the Eliquis, and doesn't the Eliquis prevent me from the risk of stroke? Like the
it lowers the risk. Yes. It lowers the risk of stroke and pulmonary embolism. It doesn't abolish the risk. Okay, it decreases
but the Watchman
risk.
Does. Or the Watchman
does. The Watchman does a better job than the anticoagulation. And, of course, the ideal, if you really want to lower your risk, would be to do them both, perhaps.
Well, with the medication, too, you know, you run the risk of bleeding.
Wait a minute, Jerry, excuse me. I missed that last comment you made.
Well, I said, you know, sometimes it's kind of a belt and suspenders in which if you've got the Watchman and you've got some degree of anticoagulation.
Okay.
The thing that worries me about Eliquis is that some of the things that we know enhance lifespan and enhance quality of life and quality of function are things they don't want you to take on the Eliquis, like the resveratrol.
Right.
You know, resveratrol is one of the most effective drugs at preventing stem cell senescence. You know, our stem cells are regenerative cells that are in every tissue in our body. They're in our brain, our heart, our lungs, our skin, our kidneys, everywhere, our bones. And as we age, we get fewer and fewer stem cells, so we're not less and less able to grow new and repair tissue. And the stem cells we have become less and less competent. there is senescence of the stem cells over time.
Yeah.
Resveratrol is one of those compounds that does a super job of rescuing stem cell senescence. And yet it's one of the things that they say when you're on Eliquis, you shouldn't take.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, you're taking a drug to decrease your clotting. On the other hand, you're accelerating the degeneration, the rate of degeneration of your body.
Well, but they don't care about that. All they care about is stopping the blood clot.
Yes, precisely. He's a cardiologist,
right.
And he's worried about you flipping a clot because of the heart.
Right.
But the,
now, one thing.
The other problem, though, with Eliquis also is the risk for bleeding.
Yes.
So, you know, GI bleed is common, and an intracranial bleed also can happen.
Yeah, and it's true, although the risk on Eliquis is about one-fourth the risk of using the warfarin.
It definitely is lower.
So it's better than the older warfarin.
Correct.
But it's not perfect.
Right.
But then nothing is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so what are my alternatives? That I, you know, AFib's a fact. I do have it. Is the pacemaker the answer?
Well, if you can get an ablation,
cardiac ablation
therapy that stops the atrial fib permanently, that would be the way to go. Now, the problem, of course, is that nothing done to or by human beings is perfect, and ablation does not always stop.
It doesn't always work, yeah.
That's right. Sometimes it does a wonderful job, and sometimes it does a not-so-wonderful job. But if a cardiac ablation will, you know, disrupt that circuit and keep you from getting your atrial fib, then we can get you back on the medications that will enhance your life, both your lifespan and your quality of life.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I develop atrial fibrillation, that's one that I will certainly consider.
Is ablation?
Yeah, atrial fibrillation increases with age, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've used that microcirculation in our hearts for a long time, and the first blood vessels that go bad are the tiniest ones, the ones that are so skinny that the red cells have to go through one in single file. And we're thinking that's probably what's happening with us with our atrial fibrillation, that circuitry that is supposed to make the heart contract in a nice, organized fashion, the electrical components of it are going bad because of just wear and tear and microcirculation issues that won't show up on the scans.
Mm-hmm.
So, go ahead.
Ablation, can they do it once, and if it doesn't work, they ablate another area? Or how does ablation work? Do they go in there and just nuke the whole thing and get it over with?
Yeah,
or how do they do that?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of different patterns they use. But basically, they go in and use a microwave generator that heats the tip of this catheter, and they kind of do a crosshatch pattern, and the superficial layers of the atrium, of the endometrial layers of the heart, are basically cut in kind of a crosshatch, so that if the electrical impulse starts to go, it gets stopped because it hits basically a scar tissue barrier that it can't get through. But sometimes they don't go quite deep enough, or sometimes some people's, you know, circulatory system is not quite according to the standard plan, and the pattern of crosshatch just doesn't stop it. And so for the people it works, it can work wonderfully and get them off all their medications, and they don't have atrial fibrillation anymore, and, you know. But some people end up needing a pacemaker afterwards, and some people keep going into fib and then still end up on the medications. And so, you know, talk to your cardiologist and probably the electrophysiologist that he would refer you to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's excellent. You know, I don't have much faith in my cardiologist. I hate to say that, but, you know, finding a decent doc nowadays is not easy. They're out there, I know, but boy.
Finding any doc these days is,
so
I mean,
true.
It's a 2-3 month wait just to get in and get seen. And if it's somebody you don't know, you have no idea how good they are before you see them.
You're telling me.
Right.
So it's scary to do that. So, on there, if worse comes to worse, what is the big disadvantage of a pacemaker? My 94-year-old mother-in-law has a pacemaker, and she loves it.
Yeah. Well, again, pacemaker is a general term. There's lots of different kinds of pacemakers used for different reasons. There's the old, you know, single polar that just they put it in the ventricle and it just makes the ventricle contract whenever the pacemaker tells it to. There's two lead pacemakers, one in the atria and one in the ventricle, that they use basically to pace the atria to preload the ventricle, and those tend to be more efficient. You know, there's overdrive pacing that they do to prevent you from your own heart from taking off too fast. There's pacemakers that are set that have a low level that if your heart tends to slow down too much with your atrial fibrillation, it won't let it drop below 60 or 65 or whatever they set it at.
You know, that's another thing that concerned me. This drug the doctor recommended, it slows your heart rate. My resting heart rate at night is around in the high 40s, you know, 47, 48. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's according to my Apple Watch. And, you know, when I'm not AFib and I exercise, I'm just very, very active and it's no problem, but just occasional. Should I just live with the occasional AFib for a while till it gets worse, or is that dangerous?
Well, see, the occasional is more dangerous than the consistent. The worry with the occasional is that in that time in which you're in atrial fibrillation, you may form a mural thrombus, a clot along the wall of the atrium. And then when you go back into sinus rhythm, that atrium contracts and knocks the clot off. And that's when you have your pulmonary embolism or your heart attack or your stroke, is when you go from atrial fib back into normal sinus.
Doesn't the Eliquis protect that, though?
Well, it's supposed to. It decreases the probability of a clot.
Okay.
It's not
100%. So what would you do if you're in my position? We're just about the same age. I'm 73. What would you do?
Yeah, and I'm a few years older than you. Once more, I'd be talking to the electrophysiologist. I'd try the medications first. If we can stop me from having atrial fib and I still feel great, that's wonderful. But if the side effects of the medicines are too great, then I'd talk to him seriously about either a Watchman and or an atrial ablation.
Yeah. So you do the Watchman before the ablation?
I talk to them about both. I wouldn't make up a decision until after I spent some time chatting with the cardiologist and the electrophysiologist.
Yeah. So.
Okay, get
so
the
I guess
expert
I'm not
opinions for
the drug. I mean, just what I've heard about it, it's just terrifying.
Yeah.
So.
Get the expert opinions before you make a decision.
Yeah, I will do that. Thank you guys so much.
All right, take care.
Dave.
Bye-bye.